Our next guest with us now in the studio, Dr. Zachary Stowe, is a professor of psychiatry, treats patients at UW Health. His specialties are managing addicted moms during pregnancy, which can be a real issue, mothers who have psychiatric conditions. What would you like to know about treatments for mental health conditions during pregnancies? Do you have depression or anxiety during your pregnancy that were maybe left untreated? We'd love to have you join in the conversation. The number to call, 800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions and comments. And Dr. Zachary Stowe, thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate it very much.
I appreciate you having me. Thank you.
Why do so few women seek help when they're depressed during a pregnancy?
Well, I think part of the problem is that if we've known about mental health issues during pregnancy and postpartum for a long time, and it's really only been in the last, I'd say, 10 to 15 years that we've started to recognize the adverse impacts of these conditions on both obstetrical outcome, family stability, and now child development. And so I think now that we're recognizing the adverse impact, we're more likely to treat. And it's starting to filter through to many of the folks out there that are suffering that there are treatment options and that sometimes the treatment option is the right way to go.
How can you tell if it's depression even? Are there some symptoms of that will show up in those circumstances?
Well, that's a great question because a lot of things change during pregnancy and when you have a baby: sleep, energy, concentration. And typically what I encourage folks to think about is this is a time where you're not happy all the time, but you're capable of being happy some of the time. And if you just find that emotionally you just are not yourself, that maybe things are not quite as joyful as you'd like them to be, maybe you're unable to sleep or you're so anxious that you're worried about everything, I think it's worth asking your professional to maybe ask a few more questions and see if maybe we're missing something.
Yeah, had someone tell me that she said that she couldn't figure out why her friends who had children all seemed to be so happy, and she wasn't happy. She was not as happy as she felt like she should be.
Yeah. Well, generally speaking, postpartum depression or illness after having a baby can affect 10-15% of all women. And I think that the social context, of course, is that new moms are all happy, and that's just not true. And so many times they don't come to treatment early enough because they're trying to figure out kind of what's wrong. Like, or am I okay? And as I said, I think that if you're just not sure, it's best to ask the professional and get some more input.
Makes a lot of sense. Dr. Zachary Stowe, our guest today, professor of psychiatry, treats patients at UW Health, specializes in working with a lot of different people, helps manage addicted moms during pregnancy, mothers who have psychiatric conditions who need to stay on their medications during pregnancy and afterwards. And he'll be with us right up until 12:30 today, so I hope you'll join in. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234, email us at ideas@wpr.org, or post on our Ideas Network Facebook page. And we'll be back with Dr. Stowe right after the news. Stay with us. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about helping women with mental health problems during pregnancy with our guest, Dr. Zachary Stowe, in the studio with me, professor of psychiatry, treats patients at UW Health. I hope you have some questions about treating mental health issues during pregnancy. You can certainly join in our conversation. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Ideas Network Facebook page. Love to hear from you. We talked a bit, Dr. Stowe, about depression, anxiety disorders. What about anxiety disorders and how is that diagnosed?
Well, it's a fantastic question. One of the problems that has come up with our literature in mental health issues during pregnancy and postpartum is we've almost focused too exclusively on depression. And anxiety is actually a more common condition.
Hmm.
panic attacks do occur during pregnancy, and now we have some data that actually untreated anxiety in pregnancy probably poses some significant risks as well. Generally speaking, what I think about for anxiety is that uncontrollable anxiety, alleviation of fears, is extremely difficult. Discrete panic attacks, they all look very similar during pregnancy as they do in non-pregnant states. So there's not a lot of diagnostic differences there, but I think women should be aware, as well as their support systems, that those can continue.
Should everyone who with these symptoms, should they be treated, or are some women, you know, more susceptible? Or
well, you know, it's, again, who should be treated? I always base it on functioning and how they're doing. And there are a variety of treatments. I think that, unfortunately, a lot of times people think that treatment always involves medications. That's not necessarily true. There are different types of therapy, mindfulness, and other things that are don't involve medicines that can be equally effective. But I think that they often benefit from having an objective person helping guide them through that treatment so that it's more effective.
And what procedures are, I don't know, procedure is probably not the right word, but techniques, what kinds of techniques are used during a visit with someone like yourself?
Okay. So the initial part that we're going through when I'm seeing someone is an evaluation of the symptoms that they're having, to include both mood problems, anxiety problems. I'll also key in on things like sleep, appetite, issues that might actually influence their ability to care for their newborn, or in some cases, take care of themselves during the pregnancy. This then will move to my asking, what's the most important thing that I can make better for you? So that we're making sure that we're focusing on what the patient is there for and that they're identifying as the biggest problem. I then will lay out their treatment options. And fortunately, we do have a variety of treatment options. And because of the research in this area by myself and colleagues, we've established an enormous reproductive safety database for many of our treatments.
We have callers online. Again, you can join in with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Afina in Waukesha, we'll give you a chance now. Thank you for joining us.
Hi.
Good afternoon.
Hi, I had a quick question. So I recently had a baby, and I mean, I think I've definitely been depressed. I've suffered from depression in the past, and I don't really believe in taking medication and stuff like that. So I just kind of, I know I have to, you know, do things for myself. But my question is, how do you get the people around you to understand how you feel? Because that's been the biggest thing I've struggled with is, you know, like, I can say, hey, I'm depressed, or hey, I'm not happy, but, like, no one around me, you don't really do anything to help me, I guess. Like, I feel like it's kind of like, oh, well, you know, she is just in a bad mood today.
Yeah. Well, I think you're raising an excellent point, and that is, how do we mobilize our support systems when we're not doing well in a way that they can help us? So to the first point, if someone is feeling depressed or down and they're trying to do many of the things that may help them, such as get some rest, eat properly, things of this nature, many times the support system doesn't recognize the level of importance that that will hold for them because they're feeling poorly. Do understand that while we've made numerous advances in mental health, there still remains a large stigma with respect to depression and anxiety somehow being almost like a character flaw or a personality issue that you just kind of need to get over. It's unfortunate when we hear this. We know that that's pretty far from, really far from the truth. So I usually tell people, ask more specifically for things that people can do. I need you to help me do the laundry. I need you to help me do a very specific thing, and try not to make it quite as much about how you're emotionally feeling, because that may not be something that they're willing to kind of relate with anyway. But I think most people do understand help. And so I try to get folks to remove the words depression, anxiety from their vocabulary and just say, I need help with this. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. It sounds like good advice to me, for sure. Sarah in La Crosse, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. I just wanted you to address the thyroid issue. I was postpartum diagnosed with depression, anxiety, and I kind of pressed them further and ended up being hyperthyroidism. Mm-hmm. So I just would like you to address that. Thank you.
Sarah, you raise a really, really good point, and that is that depression and anxiety can present for a variety of reasons. And it doesn't mean that something else isn't going on, and it doesn't mean that it's caused by whatever you're looking at. The thyroid evaluation in pregnant and postpartum women is something that most of us in the medical field probably maybe aren't as thorough as we could be. There's a condition referred to as postpartum autoimmune thyroiditis. This is going to affect anywhere from 5 to 10% of postpartum women. Its peak incidence is at about 4 months postpartum. But the antibodies that cause this condition actually appear in late pregnancy, so that you end up with a situation where it's almost like hyper and hypothyroid alternating in the early postpartum can mimic anxiety, inability to rest, difficulty concentrating, and a variety of things. If it were up to me, if we were doing a test in a postpartum woman where we were concerned about depression, anxiety, and we checked their thyroid, we would always be measuring the antibodies as well to make sure we screen for that. Now, having said that, postpartum thyroid problems do tend to be transient, lasting a few months, and that many of those cases actually resolve spontaneously. And only about a quarter of the women that have this problem end up having a persistent problem with their thyroid.
All right. Does that help, Sarah?
Yep. Thank you so much for addressing it.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, 800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions or comments. What suggestions do you have for women who don't feel comfortable bringing these issues up with their physicians?
You know, I would like to think that we would all be able to talk to our doctors easily and comfortably, and that just simply isn't the case. It could be an availability issue. It could be time constraints on appointments, a variety of different things. My experience has been in that many people do have within their support system people that they feel confident they can share things with. And so the message that I would send out to that support system is, if you're hearing someone talking about symptoms during pregnant and postpartum, encouraging them after they've talked with you to actually seek additional information and help. We're fortunate that there are some really credible websites with information about postpartum depression as well as depression and anxiety. And I think that in the support system, encouraging them to go one step further is what I would say. And if you're not comfortable talking with one of your clinicians, maybe we need to help you identify some other clinicians to talk with.
Yeah, that makes sense as well. Well, you specialize, one of your specialty areas is managing addicted moms during pregnancy. Mm-hmm. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, I've been focused on perinatal mental health issues for almost 30 years now. And one of the issues in bringing me to Wisconsin, which I was very excited about, was the opportunity to work here in the university and with colleagues around the state, because there are a variety of problems that we've identified in pregnancy. Substance use issues. We hear the opioid epidemic kind of on the news on a regular basis. Yeah. And while this is a major issue and a problem, we have other problems that we don't want to kind of not address. And here in Wisconsin, one of those is actually alcohol use during pregnancy. It is certainly more common than most of the other substance use disorders, and probably not as well addressed as we might like. I think that looking at the opioid use and looking at the things that complicate substance use, since many of those women may also have trouble with cigarettes and things of this nature, our goal is to develop a very comprehensive treatment program over the next 6 months for women with multiple issues during pregnancy. This would include not just the substance use, but also women that might be struggling with pain management before they get pregnant, and things of this nature. So it's a very complicated issue, but I think it's an area that we've made a lot of advances in recently, and I think that we're going to be able to offer the people of Wisconsin some good resources here down the road.
That's great. Let's take another call. Jim in Milwaukee up next. Hi, Jim. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I want to follow up on what the doctor just talked about, postpartum depression. My wife was diagnosed 25 years ago with postpartum, and what my question is, those antibodies that you were discussing, does that go into the child through breastfeeding? Because my daughter has suffered with adolescent depression, and I'd like to know what that does to the baby and the child.
Mm-hmm. Jim, I think that you're striking on something here that's really critical, and that is the intergenerational effects of both mental health issues, medical conditions, and their treatment. One of our challenges in looking at this is that we know that thyroid problems can run in families anyway, and I do not know of any clear data that has looked at whether or not thyroid antibodies present in breast milk would create any problems in the offspring. From a medical perspective, it's hard for me to imagine that happening, but just because I can't imagine it doesn't mean that we've studied it and that I have an answer on that one. What I would remind everybody is that things run in families, and this is critically important when presenting to a clinician, making sure, I think one of the best things that we can do for our children is documenting our own medical histories, what has worked for us and not worked for us, so that when our children present with an issue, the clinicians have a place to start with respect to treatment or other diagnoses. So based on what you're telling me, it would make perfect sense then to follow the thyroid in your daughter as a potential causative or associated problem with any mood or anxiety issues.
Yeah, that makes sense as well. Thank you so much, Jim. Good luck. Appreciate it. Dawn in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Dawn.
Hi. I have some concerns about my daughter-in-law. This is her third pregnancy. For the first pregnancy, she had to have shots to hold the pregnancy, and her son was a preemie. And then for her second pregnancy, she also had to get shots, but this girl was not that early. And now she is having the third pregnancy, and with the shots, I was kind of wondering, could that possibly cause depression and stuff, because she's pulling back from the family.
Okay. So I appreciate the question, Dawn. As I understand it, what you're saying is that she's experienced problems with preterm labor, and they are they're treating that with progesterone injections to reduce her risk for delivering early. And you're concerned that possibly those shots might be influencing her from an emotional perspective, and that as she maybe is getting more depressed. Am I hearing that correctly?
Yeah,
okay.
I guess I don't really know if it's depression or not, but something.
Yeah, well, certainly giving hormones can affect a woman's mood. It's not necessarily always the most politically correct conversation to be having, but the reality is hormones can affect mood and anxiety. Is there data on giving the shots to stop preterm delivery or preterm labor? In all honesty, that's not really something that we're going to interrogate real heavily, because what you're trying to treat with the shot poses a significant risk, so that then you would continue that treatment, but you might say, hey, maybe we need to evaluate for other issues going on, but I would certainly not want to stop any treatment to reduce the chance of a preterm delivery.
So that may or may not be an issue as for her to be pulling back from the family. There could be other things going on here.
Right. I think it's easy to think about a medical treatment as having an adverse effect, and I think we always have to be mindful that sometimes things can occur. For example, depression during pregnancy doesn't care whether it's your first pregnancy or your fifth pregnancy. When you look across the data set, there's pretty good evidence that you can have several pregnancies with no problem and then have a problem in a later pregnancy.
Wow. Don, I hope that helped. Thank you so much for calling. Martha in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Martha.
Hi there. I'm like 40 years postpartum, so it's just comments for me. The first is, I want to thank you for mentioning the thyroid problems. I did have severe thyroid problems when I was in my mid-40s, and my the endocrinologist who was at Milwaukee Medical College said that a lot of this is traced back to postpartum depression. That's when it first manifests itself. And evidently mine did, and, you know, but not, we didn't know it. But the other issue is that it's so important for people, it's so validating for people to acknowledge that this happens to so many women. My whole support system when I had my second pregnancy was kind of gone. One of my best friends had left the area. We had financial problems. We had everything possible. And I didn't know what was wrong until my son's pediatrician said, well, you know, I think you've got postpartum depression. And it made such a difference, realizing what was wrong with me. It wasn't psychosis or anything. I was just exhausted. I mean, I could barely function. And then a friend of my mother's said, oh, for God's sake, that girl's got postpartum depression. You know, she needs some help, and, you know, physical help. And, you know, so my mother would take my daughter and for a few hours once in a while so I could sleep. And it made such a huge difference. And I wish more people would address that.
Yeah. Thank you for calling. A comment from you, Dr. Stowe?
Well, I think I appreciate your call, Martha. I think one thing that I would add here that is very different now is that we've seen this collaboration going on for the last few years between pediatrics, obstetrics, gynecology, psychology, and psychiatry, and that is kind of this recognition of the need to screen and identify. And now I believe that the new APA guideline, American Psychiatric Association guideline, as well as the guidelines for our colleagues in obstetrics, gynecology, and pediatrics, actually have encouraged or required screening for postpartum depression in new mothers, both in the obstetrical clinic as well as the pediatric clinic. So it is my sincerest hope that these measures and this ongoing collaboration will improve our ability to identify individuals, quite honestly, such as yourself, and be more kind of forthcoming with treatment options and interventions.
Thank you very much for calling, Martha. Appreciate your call. I want to go back to Dawn, who was on just before, talking about her daughter-in-law, who seemed to be pulling away from the family. Mm-hmm. What are things that, are there things that Dawn or other family members should do? Should they be addressing maybe this with her privately or directly? Or what's a family approach to this?
Well, you know, I wish that there was a one-size-fits-all on a family approach to this. And what I usually tell people is if you're watching an individual that you feel that you've seen a change in their behavior, thinking about how well you can communicate with that individual, what kind of relationship you have with that person, and then bringing up the idea that you've noticed this change, and always bringing the analogy I always use is you're speaking from the perspective of, in my opinion, or I have noticed, so that there's no you're doing this or you're doing that type of tone to it. And if you're also not the best confident with that individual, or maybe don't have the best relationship with that person, then I think it's incumbent upon you maybe to identify somebody else that has that kind of relationship that they might be more willing to hear what they say. But I think we have to be upfront on this, and that is there are folks out there that simply put do not want to be identified as depressed and anxious. And even if they're having those symptoms, they may still continue to withdraw. They may deny them. It's an ongoing problem that we struggle with. And my hope is that it will continue to improve.
And you hope that those folks can be somehow convinced to at least speak with a professional.
I think that one thing that we don't emphasize enough is that if you look at the impact of depression, anxiety during pregnancy and postpartum, one of the reasons that this has gained the ground it has is because we identified the adverse effects of this, the adverse effects on pregnancy outcome, the adverse effects on child development and growth, things of this nature. So to put it in perspective, 25 years ago, we had almost no information about these medicines in pregnancy and breastfeeding. Today, antidepressants have the most information of any class of medicines. in breastfeeding and probably is only surpassed by some antibiotics in pregnancy. So just the sheer fact that we've identified this as a problem, and I think that's one of the messages that doesn't come out as well. We don't want to treat you without reason. We want to treat you because we know that there's other problems that can be associated with this that do have other impacts that we don't want to happen.
Is there a place online, perhaps, where maybe at your own site, where people could learn more?
We're developing our website now. There are some very valuable information on this with some of the self-help groups. I would also say that the APA has some good links to information about this. That was one thing that we just did in our policy statement. And so I think that this information is available. I certainly don't think it's just a simple search the internet thing. I'm not sure what information you always get when you do that. But people are welcome to reach out to our program, and we'll do our best to steer them the right direction.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us today, Dr. Zachary Stowe, a professor of psychiatry. And it will be interesting to hear maybe 6 months down the road about the proposal that you have statewide. Appreciate that very much.